Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the Nonprofit Architect Podcast. I'm here today with Jamila Kemp. Jamila, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
You know, I'm doing all right. I the cloud's a little cloudy, which means it's not too hot. And it's nice little breeze going through the trees. I'm at home in the U.S. and I couldn't be happier to be here with you today. I know today we're going to talk about some fun stuff like startup nonprofits and board organization and organizational management training. What in the earth that means. But that's what you do, Jamila.
So I operate Jamila Kemp Consulting. I've been doing that for 6 years, and I launched it after graduating in 2014 with my master's in nonprofit and association management. Two reasons. One was to start creating a way to start paying my student loans back. And two, I wanted to give back to those who are looking to start a nonprofit. I launched an organization as well 8 years ago called It Takes Two Incorporated, and I was able to use those personal day-to-day experiences, as well as what I learned in a classroom, to help aspiring and new nonprofit founders. And I also work for a nonprofit during the day where I am in the customer service, member services arena, I guess you could say. And that's kind of really my world, my background. Where I come from is customer service for over 20 years. And I think that translates well into the nonprofit world because it's all about service and it's all about doing what's right and making sure at the end of that call or that email that that person feels like they got what they needed. And so that's what we do at the core of nonprofits. We identify a problem and we provide a solution. So I sleep, eat, and breathe nonprofits. So that's my world. I love it. You know, it's my ministry and my way of giving back.
I love it. There's nothing that says service more than just giving from yourself. And it sounds like you're giving from every single angle possible. I hope you take time to recharge throughout the week on a regular basis.
Regular, no, but I do take time. Self-care moments, I could use more of those. But what I will say, when this pandemic started and we were quarantined, I think the first 2.5-3 weeks, I did absolutely nothing. Because at that point, I was burnt out. God does things in decency and in order, despite what is surrounding the pandemic. I think for a lot of us, it forced us to kind of take a step back and pause and recalibrate and reassess. So I was able to get a lot of rest in there. I did absolutely nothing. It was great. It felt a little weird because I'm always doing something, but I think that's the recharge that I needed so that I'm now able to move like I am now and actually check some things off of my to-do list. So self-care, yes. I'll that a little bit more.
I know without a doubt that it's impossible to pour from an empty cup. So I'm glad you're recharging and getting your house in order and taking care of you so you can take care of other people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now you have this amazing first year major milestones checklist. What kind of things are on there and how did you come up with this thing?
Sure. So this was one of my brainchilds. As I was developing the consulting, I started to have all of these checklists in my head. Personally, for me, to start the organization through the startup programs. But then I would get all of these questions about what did we do at this point and what are some milestones. So I finally just sat down one day. I created this PowerPoint presentation. It's long. It could be a 3-day course, honestly, as massive as it is. But we talk about what the CEO should be doing or the executive director. We talk about milestones that the organization itself should be meeting. And then we focus on the board of directors, what their milestones over the year should be. So when we talk about organizational milestones, we're talking about things such as making sure you're compliant at the federal and state level, making sure you file for your DUNS number, you have a process and structure where your board can come and meet collaboratively in a cloud-based environment, making sure your financials are in order, you have an operating budget, right? And then I break it down even further in assigning who should be leading those tasks. Is it the executive director, the treasurer, the secretary, the board itself collectively? So that also helps founders to delegate tasks and help everyone identify kind of what their lane is. Because when you're starting off, everybody's trying to do everything. We actually just, you know, we just said that. So if we can start off from the very beginning, being able to assign some duties and helping everybody find their lane, this thing will start to move a little bit smoother from the very beginning, and you're not always being reactive. I like to operate from a proactive standpoint. And I think this is what this milestone program, I'll call it, does for founders.
Well, that's really good. I mean, there's out of all the things to do on the business side, the straight business, for-profit side, there's all these things that are laid out there, how to do this, how to do that. You know, boards are a part of for-profit businesses as well, but not every for-profit business. But it always seems like, you know, there's not a lot of clarity on what the next steps are, and they're not really sure if they're ready for the next step, or they're not even really sure if they should start a nonprofit. Now, you have a pretty good take on one metric that I think matters. I don't know if above all else, but a pretty high metric. What do you say that those visionaries that want to start their own nonprofit, what do they have to have?
I always start out with the why, W-H-Y. The W is who do you want to serve? If you're not able to clearly articulate these three things, then I would ask that you really take a pause and really are in a position to articulate it. Who do you want to serve? Who is your passion population? For me, it's young people and single parents. That's why we award scholarships to students that live in single parent homes. I'm a single parent, and this is things that I struggle with. The next is the H, how. How do you want to serve them? How will you create impact? All of your programs and services and events and activities, how is that going to roll up to impact in making and improving the lives of these individuals that you have identified? And last is why. Why do you really want to start this organization? Is it personal? Do you see a problem in your community or the world that you want to provide a solution to? And is it a viable solution? Is it community focused? Is it really solving a problem of a subset of individuals or whatever it may be? It could even be a cause such as the environment. So we really have to be able to clearly identify those three things before we can even think about starting a nonprofit. And if we're clear on where we're going, we have a better chance of getting there.
So I'm a new nonprofit. I've got the who do I want to serve all lined up. I know how I want to serve them and why do I really want to start. And I've got that all on lockdown. Should I just start a nonprofit?
No. Lots of planning, lots of research. It's still not ready yet. Okay. A lot of nonprofits start because the founders want to do good. But as I always say, doing good is a business. You have to understand the industry. So get as much information as you can about nonprofits. The best way is to actually volunteer and serve for one. You can also sit on the board of directors. There are tons of resources out there that are available to us in starting out. So get the education first. Understand what is expected of you as the founder and executive director, if you choose to assume that title, and then also find out what the industry expects of you and what you expect of it. You know, what do you have to look forward to? When you're looking at the educational piece, you got to think about your team. As a nonprofit, you may be the visionary, the founder, or the executive director, but you cannot make all of the decisions. You cannot lead this organization by yourself. You need a team. And that can be the hardest part, is finding a qualified team who is invested in supporting the work. Then you need to plan. You have ideas of how you want to support, but is it in your head or do you have it on paper? Does it make sense? What is your pilot program? Where are you going to get your funding? What are the different mechanisms of bringing in revenue? A nonprofit is a business. We do need multiple streams of income. Okay. We do have something called a surplus. We don't use the word profit, that's reserved for for-profit entities, but we do have a surplus where we should carry over money year after year. We cannot end every fiscal year with no money in the bank. That is not the way to sustainability. So as I'm saying all of this, this is the educational piece that we need to understand so that when we receive that IRS determination letter that says, yes, you are a 501c3 nonprofit charity, we actually know what it means. And we actually have a plan when we get that piece of paper, because then that's when the work really begins. Starting the nonprofit is easy. It's operating it that has its challenges that you need to understand before you get started.
You know, I talked to a young lady in the Washington, D.C. area Stacia. She had a heart for nonprofits and she was wanting to do some good things. I said, great. What are you looking to do? She's like, well, I really want to start a group home for women veterans. I'm like, fantastic. How many women veterans have you talked to said that this is something that they need? And she's like, what do you mean? And I was like, it's a fantastic population to want to help. Is that something that would actually benefit that population? And right. She was unsure. She hadn't actually asked the question. She hadn't surveyed the people she's trying to help to see if that is something that they would actually need. And I think that's a very valuable part of starting a nonprofit. If your needs being met somewhere else or the population you see a need and they don't feel that they need that same thing, then you're not going to be able to serve that population if you're going to give them something that they don't think they need.
Yeah, that's true. So that is a very good point. And that's why there's a lot of duplication in the nonprofit industry, because we all want to do good. But if we're all doing the same thing, I hate to use the word competition when it comes to nonprofits, because we should not be competing with one another. However, if we have similar missions in a close geographical location serving the same population, we are vying for the same pot of money. And if we're not setting ourselves apart in some unique, innovative way, then we're going to be in competition for those dollars. So we do need to do a needs assessment. We do need to see what types of other nonprofits are out there regionally, just in your backyard, right? And see, maybe it's not you starting another entity and running it. Maybe it's you partnering with an existing organization. Or it could be a for-profit venture. So the whole conversation about why you want to start this, if you're looking to make money, go the for-profit route. Nonprofit route is not the route for you. Okay. Some people misuse the status. I've seen it. I've witnessed it. It's not fair to us, but it happens. So that's why we have to have that gut check moment as to why do I want to do this? But yes, that needs assessment is necessary.
So I've done all the things on our checklist. I get my 501c3 money's just going to rain down from the heavens upon me. And I'm going to be able to do everything I said I'm going to do. Is that how that works?
Oh, I wish. And I'm a God-fearing woman too, but no, it doesn't happen that way. As I always say, that IRS determination letter, it makes you eligible. It doesn't make you qualified. That letter makes you eligible to go to that website, hit the submit button on that grant, but it does not make you qualified to receive it. We have to do the work. The same way we're coming from a consulting background or you're looking for support in some sort of service-based capacity, you need some proof from that consultant that they're legitimate and that they're going to deliver what they say they're going to deliver. We have to do the exact same thing in the nonprofit industry. We have to show up and execute. We have to show the community that we are about our business, that we are clear on our intentions, and that we actually have a strategy and we're actually implementing. Share as much as possible. Pilot the program. Get 10 people, 5 people, whatever it is. Do the work. And as you start to get your data, your testimonials, survey results, whatever they are, and you start to measure your outcomes, that's how you start to craft your nonprofit story. That's how you start to get those data points that you can go to sponsors and just regular people to say, hey, this is what we said we were going to do. We actually did it. And here are the results. And that goes a very long way in getting grant ready. We're not grant ready as soon as we have the letter. We have to put some skin in the game. We have to do the work and show those grantors that as they're reading their proposal, that we have a plan and we've already done the work. We just need some more money so we can continue to do the work. So no, money's not going to fall out the sky.
So you recommend that a founder has a surplus of money to help get everything started?
Yes, they should come to the table having some understanding the costs. First, that's that whole education piece I was talking about. How much is it going to start at the state level, the federal level? What are things I need to consider as far as operational business costs? Come to the table with that. Also, be prepared to ask your board to financially give as well. Every single board member should have a financial commitment. And in the very beginning, half or all of it can be used for those operational costs to build the organization. But yes, founders do expect to invest for some time, but as you start to become more sustainable, as your programs start to flourish, as people start to know more about you, you're getting some donations and the organization cannot be contingent, solely contingent on your revenue. You have to create these income stream so that your donations become supplemental at some point. It took a little while for me. It took a few years before I had to stop giving so that we could actually operate. So now our donations are supplemental to the revenue streams that we have coming in. And that's the ultimate goal.
Absolutely. I think it's important to know that you have to come into this full on knowing that money is going to be coming out of your pocket and the pockets of your board members to get things even started or rolling. Mm-hmm. Now, what would you tell a nonprofit that's maybe been operating for 1 or 2 years, but they don't really have a signature program?
Create one.
I have talked to, we're chuckling, right? We're laughing about this. I have talked to, in the past month, no less than 5 nonprofits that have been operating for a year or two, but they don't actually have their own program, their own thing that they do, to where they can say, well, how do you help people? And they say, we help them right here, just like this, with this program. This is what they look like before. Here's our program, and here's what they look like afterwards. You have got to have your program or something that you do to show the world that you're meeting your mission statement.
There's activities, there's events, and then there's programs. Programs are fundable. A good friend of mine and business partner, the funding is in the programs. Her name is Takesha Boone. If you're listening, hey, programs provide a long-term solution to the problem that you have identified for your service population. So I'll use us as an example. Again, it was personal for me. I couldn't afford food and school supplies and food for the week when it was time to send my son to kindergarten. He's now 16. So we award a scholarship, Schools for Success scholarships. It pays for school supplies, books, uniforms, and academic and sports registration fees. And because of COVID-19, we added laptops, tutoring, and even internet if the family needs it. We're going to do a needs assessment. And we actually just met on Saturday to choose our winners. It's a scholarship, but it's a program in that we help them along the way for an entire year. We connect them with other community resources if they need tutoring or if they need bed sheets for their college dorm or whatever it may be. So we are there with them. It's a program. Now, you can't really get grant funding for scholarships. That just doesn't exist. But we created a youth program called our Position for Greatness Youth Program that sits on 6 pillars. It's a 9-month program that walks them through a variety of things. Everything is online now, but one of the signature activities within that program was our college access tour. And we gave family local school options here in Maryland. And it also allows students to get out of their immediate neighborhoods and figure out, do they want to go to a big campus or a small campus? That program is fundable, and the program has many different activities under it. When we do these one-off activities, it's not showing funders that we have a complete program, the complete picture, and how we're going to take them from A to Z. So that's the difference between events, programs, and activities. They can all roll up into one, but you have to have a signature pilot program that people know your organization for. The public, anyone coming to your website, they're looking at your program and saying, hey, you know what? I need this, 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 and this. How do I connect? So yes, we have to have that program. And how do we do that? We look at what the problems are. And if we're just getting started, what I always tell my clients is to think about what is easily implementable but delivers immediate impact. What does that look like for your service population? If you're servicing youth and maybe you want to start an organization that provides free tutoring to underprivileged students, Zoom, $15 a month. Promote it on social media free. Use Canva, create a flyer. Canva's free. And you can also apply for Canva for nonprofits and get the pro version for free as well. Promote it across your social media platforms. Create a Facebook page, all of your social media pages for your organization. Send an email blast. You'll get students who need tutoring. Then where do you find the tutors? Teachers. Where do you find the funding? Facebook fundraiser. It's all about the planning. Facebook, getting set up on Facebook is free. You just have to go through the process and be patient with Facebook. It's taking them a little bit longer right now. But that is where the planning comes in that I talked about from the very beginning. Before we start, we have to have this in place so that we're not trying to scramble after we have our status.
Look, I just have a good idea and I applied for my status and got it. I had my brother and my sister-in-law as my board members. Isn't that good?
No. It's not good. A lot of people do that as well because they want to, I'm going to answer this two ways. They may move forward with family members because they believe that that's what they can do. And they want to go ahead and move the application forward. However, you're doing yourself and the organization a disservice by not having qualified board members. Additionally, we have to be careful because the IRS has a limitation of 49% of your board cannot be related. Okay, so you're considered another type of entity. You're considered a private foundation where it is okay for a large percentage of the board to be family members because they have their own pot of money or it's coming from an estate or whatever the case may be. But when we're talking about a 501c3 public charity, the board should be representative of the community that we're serving and those who are in our service population. I do not suggest family and friends at all.
So then where am I going to find qualified board members?
We're going to go to our professional networks. We can look at those who are in our networks on social media. You're going to start looking at people differently. We're looking for people who have a talent, a skill set, a network that we don't have access to or that we don't inherently possess so that we can all build together. We're coming around that boardroom table with our own skills, but they're all going to work cohesively, create this amazing recipe of success, right? We're going to bring everything that we know to the table based upon the mission. Some of my key sources are LinkedIn because that's where professionals live. And if you look at their profile, they will say that they're eligible that they will volunteer to sit on a board. So look for those kind of keywords. When you're on LinkedIn as well, there are nonprofit groups. Just search nonprofit boards. Something will come up. Another great resource is boardsource.org. You can post your open volunteer positions there, but you have to have your IRS determination letter. They do ask for eligibility. They do ask for that in their requirement process. So if you don't have your status yet, don't even try. You're not going to be able to go through. Another resource that we find very useful is volunteermatch.org. And you can put any volunteer position there that you have open. Volunteers will find you. They're going to search by location. They're going to search by mission. If they love young people, they're going to search for Maryland youth, homeless, whatever their service population is or their passion population. They will find you. And just social media, people are watching you, whether you know it or not. And they're rooting for you. Sometimes they tell you, sometimes they don't. But we have not because we ask not. So we have to ask. But we have to be ready for them when they say yes. And so that's a whole nother conversation about the onboarding and the orientation process.
So what would you tell the new startup founder that's really got all of this stuff in line, but they're scared to ask? When they're asked, like, what do you need? They're scared to say, I need A, B, and C.
Well, I've been there. I'm a person who I don't like asking for help. But once I had my aha moment and that I wasn't asking for me and I'm asking for those students that need school supplies or uniforms because they're tattered and now they're getting bullied at school, or those students who are distance learning and they don't have internet access or they don't have a laptop. It's not about us as founders. That's the thing about nonprofits. It is not about us. It is about our service population. So if you're having troubles asking for help, you're not asking for you. You're asking for whoever you voluntarily said yes to serving. Remember, nobody asked us to start this business. Nobody asked us to help this population. We did it voluntarily. So it's not about us. That was my biggest aha moment. And after that, I have no problems asking now. I'm great. I would also say to when you're looking for board members, look for someone who has fundraising experience, development. That's going to be your key right there. And board members are 100% volunteer. So what does that mean? You're not paying for the knowledge that your board is bringing, but the organization will benefit from their skill set.
Absolutely. Now, you as the founder of It Takes Two, are you serving as like the executive director?
I am I use the title of CEO, and I'm also now the board president. I started out that way, then we shifted to appointing someone, but I'm now back in that position because we're going to be rolling in a new board, and I kind of want to be hands-on and making sure that the next board chair is well-trained before I transition back out.
Okay. Do you have any concerns or anything in your bylaws that covers that could prevent them from voting you out?
No, we don't. And that's a sticky conversation.
But I think it's an important conversation, and I don't think too many people are willing to talk about that thing. I have a client of mine that is very concerned about their safety in the position as the founder who does all of the work. They're a solo shop essentially, and I'm like, I don't know what you're really worried about, but what would you say to this young lady to help, you know, quell her concerns?
In the nonprofit world, some people, consultants, whomever, they or founders, they have their bylaws written in a way where they have that protection clause. I don't believe in that protection clause. I'm not knocking anyone for what they do. However, the board itself is responsible for the executive director. The executive director is the board's only employee, whether he or she is getting paid or not. They have the power to hire and fire. I always tell my clients to think of the position as hireable and fireable. They will only fire you if you give them reason to do so. If you're mismanaging funds, you're always involved in some legal issues, there's some ethical or moral, you know, issues, or you've gone so far left of the vision, they have no idea who you are anymore as the visionary, then they have every single right to remove you, because the organization, again, is not about us. It's about the community, the population. Nonprofits, in essence, belong to the community, because most of the support, financial support, and the human capital comes from the public. So they have a right to do right by the people who are supporting the organization. And if you're not the right person, then you do need to be removed. So what I would tell this individual is think about the position as hireable and fireable. Do your job, operate way above board. Understand that this industry we're in is 1,000% transparency. We have to account for every single penny. Our financial books are not closed. They are open to the public. And it's just an understanding. And I think if I would give her that, I would hope that would ease her mind just a little bit.
Well, I know for a fact that she listens to this, and she's going to love hearing that, because I know without a doubt that she meets all the above criteria, and she operates way above board. So I don't think she has anything to worry about. But always interesting to get another consultant's opinion on things that come up in my world, because I don't know if you know this, I don't have all the answers.
Or not all
the answers don't work for everybody. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you don't like the way that, you know, something is presented, be like, hey, can we look at this in a different way, or can we take another route? Absolutely. I've got these 30 other answers on tap, and we can roll with one of them. No problem. I think that people are sometimes just unwilling to ask some of these subjects and some of these topics. They're not sure what the outcome is going to be. I'd much rather have someone ask a difficult question, and then, as opposed to me going operating like there's not a problem when there is one.
Right. Yeah, we have to have the conversation. We have to have the difficult conversations sometimes. And all we can do as a consultant is to give the information, and then it's up to whomever to receive it. So that's all we can do.
Absolutely. What kind of parting shots do you have for my listeners today?
If you're thinking about starting a nonprofit, just do it. I don't believe that there is a perfect time, but I believe that there is a right time to launch. Take a look at your financial situation, your personal situation, your home life. Your family is involved in this process, although they're not intricately involved, they're going to be affected by it. So have the conversation, do the research, get the education, know exactly why you're starting, just like I said, the WHY, and then just build it on the way down. We have to take that leap of faith. If this is what you want to do and it's been nagging at you for a couple of years, go for it. I actually didn't launch It Takes Two for 2 years. In my mind, I couldn't do it. It was a lot, but here we are 8 years later. So I'm a testament to anything is possible if you put in the work.
I love that. Anything is possible if you put in the work. Jamila, where can people get a hold of you?
You can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram at Jamila Kemp or Jamila Kemp Consulting. Visit our website, It Takes Two, ItTakesTwoInc.org. We would love to have you come on and please subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's the new channel. We're trying to grow our subscribers, but we have some great content out there. And if you want to email me, jkemp@jamilakempconsulting.com.
Man, thanks so much for a great interview, Jamila. I love the insight that you bring, and all the best to you and your consulting and your nonprofit world.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, if you like what you hear today and you want to get in the group, facebook.com/group/nonprofitarchitect. See what goes on behind the scenes. Ask the questions you want to get asked. Have your peers answer the question. And look us up at all the social media and all the podcasting sites, because, man, we're damn near everywhere. Have a great day.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.